Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, August 18th, 2011. Tonight will be the show. I've actually started this a couple weeks ago, but there was so much other material that I didn't really get involved in this topic. But tonight, the main science topic, the science of Moses, or the physics of Moses. What were all of the things going on back then? What were all of the physical issues going on? And certainly working through these in a design, grand design, with a lot of people believe today, and I happen to be in this group, that things are so distorted, so out of line with reality today, that the only thing that's going to save this planet and the people on it is if we have like a Planet X worldwide type of event where the whole thing comes crashing down. The only problem is we just go back to the cave ages, go back to the law of the jungle, and have to start crawling up the ladder again. It's like the myth of Sisyphus all over, where you never ever make progress. So at any rate, tonight I'll be talking about the science of Moses, those days when the Israelites fled out of Egypt. How did they become in bonded as a slave nation? Well, it was through credit and banking, the same issue that's going on today. The United States, the government and the banks, there's a war going on against the people of the world. And unfortunately, the United States has been integrally involved in destroying the rest of the world, partly because of the greed in the United States to have all of the things that we need. And it's just incredible the number of people in the United States that have no clue. There's a statement that Che Guevara made back in the days of the Cuban Revolution. He said, how many poor people, how many destitute people does it take to make a Nelson Rockefeller, a John D. Rockefeller? How many destitute poor people in the world does it take to make one person that wealthy? And the Rothschilds in England and Europe, who control the banking entities. It's the worldwide game of monopoly that started hundreds, if not thousands, of years ago. The rules were written a long time ago, and also the rules were written in the old texts on exactly what's happening today and how to prevent it. And the major issue here is interest on loans. It's very simple. You cannot charge compound interest. A lot of people don't understand what an amortization schedule is. If your bank, ask your banker, he doesn't want to show you that. He'll tell you in a nice, friendly, suit manner that, oh, you've got a 4.75% loan. That's a pretty good interest rate. But really, behind the scenes, it's a lie, because the original form of interest was a flat interest rate that was based on the amount of the loan. So if you borrowed $100 from someone, or whatever the currency was, you would pay back 1 or 2 or 3% of that loan, not a compounded interest, not interest that was collected up front as in an amortization schedule, and that was from a benefactor. The term benefactor, I've talked about this on the show, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail, but this is leading up to how did the Israelites become enslaved in Egypt? Well, it was based on credit. If the original ruling was you had to forgive all loans every 7 years, there was a bank holiday, all loans were forgiven. And so it was a way, the term beneficiary was the person who received the loan. The benefactor was the guy who gave the loan. And the guy who had the money to loan, or the institution, the idea was to help society, to help bring everybody up to a level. Now, it is meant to destroy and kill you. The term amortization schedule, the term amortize, comes from the Latin word mortare, or to kill. The purpose of that banking technique is to kill you, literally, and to kill you financially. So here's how it works. If you, say, borrow $100 or $100,000 or $100 million, it doesn't matter, from a bank today, under the European banking community type of loan, well, they'll tell you you got a 3 or a 6% loan, but then behind the scenes, your first payment, say you make your first payment, and 98% of that first payment is interest. That's the amortization schedule. It's meant to kill you with interest. You can never pay it. Now, when you get a loan, you borrow a certain amount of money. That money is created when you get the loan. That money just wasn't sitting there. The bank, by writing a line on a piece of paper, creates that money and gives you the money that it just created, or the phony money, I should say, and then charges you interest. Well, the bank at the time of that loan did not create enough money to pay back all the interest that it's going to collect over the length of the loan. So how do you get enough money to pay back all the loans in the world? Well, you can't. And at this point, the United States, as a country, owes more money to the European bankers than exists in the entire world. And so what does our government do? They raise the debt ceiling. They make a compromise. They put into hock you and your children for more money than exists in the world. It's a game. The people in Washington are not going to tell you that any more than the banker is going to show you an amortization schedule. Most people don't know enough to ask for it. Americans are taught in school to be sheep. This should be the first thing you are taught, that if you're going to borrow money, it's going to kill you and the society. So at any rate, that's how the Israelites became embonded. That if you look throughout history, the Babylonian captivity, the other types of captivities that occurred, the same interest banking technique was used to capture those people without a shot ever being fired. So at any rate, we get to the point where Moses, who was basically a slave, was born of a slave woman, she put him in a basket and sent him down the river hoping that something would happen. And of course, the story is clear. The wife of the Pharaoh takes him in and raises him along with the other sons of the Pharaoh. But it's very clear that Moses is an Israelite. He's different. And so when he finally goes to leave, and of course he's treated as part of the royal family, but always knowing that he's different. So when the Israelites finally head out and Moses takes them out of the country, a whole series of events happen. And let me switch just for a minute to what is known as the end days prophecies, something that a guy named Christ gave to the people when they asked him what's going to happen. He said, look for the stars, look up, look for the stars and the signs in the heaven. The stars will seem to fall from the sky, the moon will turn to blood, and the earth, the firmament, will be shaken. And he said, at this point, you know that the time is, it's here, you know, it's happening. And so, what are all of these things pointing to? This points to a great comet coming through the solar system. And my science work has pointed out that there are many of these objects, many, many, many Planet X objects. So what is the misinformation that is pounded out to the public with all of the books, all of the phony authors, all of the phony Colbrin authors that are out there trying to pump information to the public? All of those books have something on the cover. It's a big orange ball. Remember 2003, Crazy Lady Talks to Aliens, The End of the World, Planet X? The cover of the book, was a big orange ball, and she repeatedly said, look up, on May 15th, 2003, you will see a giant orange ball in the sky. That's Planet X. Well, really, it was a very special condition, full moon rising. And so, of course, this needed professional astronomers whose this whole campaign of Crazy Lady Talks to Aliens, May 15th, 2003, End of the World, Planet X, that was all started in around 1995. That's how far in advance that misinformation campaign was planned. And so you see that these people are busy at work to try and influence the public. And then, of course, the fallout from that would be massive suicides. People commit suicides due to Planet X, and it's just those crazy people who follow somebody that pretends or claims to talk to aliens. So at any rate, it's all of this is underway right now. The Comet Elenin campaign that is currently underway, raging on the internet, trying to destroy the concepts of Planet X or the real concepts, trying to destroy my name and work. Just on and on. It doesn't end. These people, there's a tremendous effort to snow the public with just incorrect information. NASA in the thick of it, claiming this week that there's a brown dwarf four times the size of Jupiter that's out in the Oort cloud, this imaginary cloud of snowball comets that's too far away to detect. But it's in the textbooks all the way up through graduate school, something that cannot even be detected or ever could be detected or confirmed is solidly in place in textbooks. That's the level of science today. Fairy tale science, I call it. That's all it is. It's just fairy tales, and people are getting PhDs in this and flying around the world to scientific meetings. Tier 2 science is alive and well. Just a highlight here on Comet Elenin. NASA has released pictures in this last week and showing that it's a small comet, according to their photos, and has an orbit as originally described, so I only can trust that those photos are real. And it looks very much convincing. Besides, if the Comet Elenin entity, if the Comet Elenin were some brown dwarf, huge thing that had all kinds of effects on Earth, where it is in its orbit right now, you could go out in your backyard at night and see it with the naked eye. You wouldn't need professional-grade equipment to see it. But it's simply not there. It's very difficult to find with even good amateur equipment. So, but that doesn't matter. The internet misinformation rages on. The point is that the poor person out there is just barraged with misinformation regarding the true nature of our solar system, which is that comets are not dirty snowballs. Comets are discharges of the solar capacitor. Some of these comets, very, very, very few of them, can be large, but when a big one comes through, the effects are devastating. And when we look at the end-day prophecies of Christ, if we look at the history of Moses leading the Israelites out of Egypt and wandering for 40 years in the desert, why did they wander for 40 years? That was a small area over there. If you look at the Sinai Peninsula, and by the way, that the path of Moses is very well known, where they went. Well, and it wouldn't take you 40 years to walk over to where Israel is. And that's the so-called promised land, the land flowing with milk and honey. It took them 40 years to get there, wandering in the desert. Well, why would it take 40 years? Well, that's because everything was destroyed. The face of Earth had changed. There was devastation everywhere. They talk about the rumbling Earth. There were tremendous physical changes that went on. So they literally wandered in the desert for 40 years. You can imagine the number of people who actually left Egypt with Moses. Most of them never lived to see the Promised Land. It was the next generation that found the Promised Land. So at any rate, what I'm saying is there was a tremendous amount of physical activity going on the Earth. at that time. What caused this? What was the physical source of all of this activity? And when you look at it closely, very clearly, these issues were caused by a passing large comet. And we know today that that large comet was Venus. Was the comet Venus coming through the solar system, eventually ending up in its orbit where it is today? But gee, that doesn't make any sense if you're NASA. Gee, that couldn't be true because comets are just little snowballs. They couldn't affect Earth. They couldn't cause electrical discharges. They couldn't cause a phenomenon on Earth. They're just little snowballs, poofy little things that melt when they get near the sun. That's the NASA statement. But you can see why it's so important to destroy history. And there's some people out there who've been borrowing and destroying the real story of history for a long time. That's why a lot of people listen to this show, because you get a dose of real history, you get a dose of real science which explains that history. Okay, so before I continue, I want to make a few quick announcements, just a product update. As many of you know, the Mountain House freeze-dried food is still available on the webpage. The Dalton water filters, as always, available. And the plastic water filter, the pre-filter is available, all of these items available, and the books right now are just about all of them going through the next printing. The Calculate Primes book just caught us by surprise. We ran out, but we'll have those printed and shipping very shortly in the next, 10 days at most. So all of this activity going on while I'm trying to do my own research in the background also. So, if you want to know, I'm a pretty busy person and also manage to eke out a little bit of time to relax and keep my keel even and vertical, as they say, to keep your keel straight and your course directed, because right now, and since about January, my name and my science work has been under attack, full-scale attack on the internet. And this was, of course, well-planned long ago because, as you can probably guess, Comet Elenin was discovered long ago by NASA. And so all of the dates, all of the misinformation campaign, and I might say that possibly some man-made events based on dating of Comet Elenin. It's not that Comet Elenin is going to cause anything, but the dates when it has alignments may be the issue. And so just to kind of go along with this concept of economic terrorism, and we all know who these people are, the representatives in the United States of the European bankers, the Federal Reserve, which basically tells the federal government what to do. As one of the Rockefellers once said, if you give me the power of the money in a country, I will own that country, and that's absolutely what's happened. Last week I talked about this, but I put a posting with quite a bit of more energy into it onto my webpage, so I'm going to quickly read this, the August 16th posting from my webpage, and I think you'll get the gist. Here's my posting regarding economic terrorism, but has a twist to it. Why the government has to shut off your electric power. Okay, so this is my August 16th posting on my webpage, jmccsci.com. Why the government has to shut off your electric power. I just finished reading the latest reports on the state of the U.S. economy, and two things are clear. The USA is on the brink of its final throes of economic collapse. This was not by accident, but has been a methodical war waged in Washington by the bureaucratic puppets we call Congress and the President. They are puppets of the international banking community, which has targeted the USA as the final land to fall before a complete worldwide one-world government can take place. The USA was saved until last because it was needed to take down the rest of the world physically and economically before they took down the USA as the last stronghold of a functional economic society. I'm going to interject here, too, that France, which is the core central point of Europe, is on its way down. Okay, so continuing. The USA was saved until last because it was needed to take down the rest of the world physically and economically before they took down the USA as the last stronghold of a functional economic society. So it's important to understand how the U.S. and its greedy businessmen and military-industrial complex has been used to destroy the rest of the world, leaving the USA last. And I know a lot of people who are millionaires. I know a lot of people who own restaurants, and they are coming down. The financial end is in sight for all of these people. Okay, continuing on. The second point is that along with the collapse of the USA economy will come immense civil unrest. It is on the brink of that state right now. But as with any civil unrest scenarios that take to the streets, it will be easy for the controlling elite to send in their hired goons into the fray as actors to make sure the public demonstrations become good and violent. But the masses, even with an invading foreign army, will be very hard to control. In spite of efforts to disarm the USA and compared to other countries, the U.S. public remains armed to the teeth, and many people are prepared to wait it out for extended periods of time, thanks to my webpage and many others like it. But how do you stop all activity? This is a question that the government, of course, is pondering. It's easy. One would simply unplug electricity to stop all activity and functionality to our tattered society. The planners in their think tanks already have learned from staging other naturally occurring events such as hurricanes, earthquakes, and tsunamis, to name a few. It will be far more convenient to stage a natural event to bring down the U.S. power grid. I see this coming as sure as you are reading this page right now. Or as in this case, you are hearing it on the radio right now. The public disinformation campaign started some time ago, culminating with NASA reporting recently that within the next solar cycle, we are sure to have a complete meltdown of our power grid due to a solar flare. This prediction could be interpreted as simply a NASA ploy for funding. But it is a wolf hidden in sheep's clothing. There is no scientific basis for imagining that the current solar cycle number 24 is any larger or more dangerous than any other in recorded history. In fact, it arrived very late and with extremely low, record-breaking low sunspot activity and is at best average. So why all the fanfare, NASA? Well, it seems that NASA's news release spin machine is working now in conjunction with its owners, the European banks. See my shows and book commentary regarding who owns science. And their goal is to put the final nails in the coffin of what we once called the United States of America. All the states are now financially bankrupt or on the verge of financial collapse. The Homeland Security web reaches down through the states to the local police forces, and the people are being tossed into the streets at a rate never seen before in history, including during the Great Depression. That was not an accident, and neither is the current financial collapse. Only this time you are going to lose your country over it. But none of this can happen without an event so powerful that will shut down every living creature and activity in this country. One could imagine all kinds of scenarios: a bio attack, weather bombing, a staged terrorist attack on a nuclear facility. The list is long and distinguished, but none of them, I repeat, none of them hold the capacity to take down every square inch of this country like a power outage of full-scale proportions. Everything depends on electricity. Very few people can sustain any activity without electricity. Any of the other methods would never shut down all activity. In fact, people in a bio or nuclear radiation dirty bomb attack just might go berserk and be far from controllable. So what's the scenario? I discussed this on my recent show of August 11th last week, August 11th, 2011. And if you missed that show, be sure to catch it on the archive page on the webpage. Okay, continuing here with my statement on the webpage, it says, people in a bio or nuclear radiation dirty bomb attack just might go berserk and be far from controllable. So what is the scenario? It is important that I have to reiterate here in writing. Here is the scenario. Congress and the President, of course, will be pre-warned, as will many important people, through secret memos that will have them in the right place at the right time. And you might just look at 911 as a good example. Many will not know specifically that this is underway, speaking of the leadership and special people who will be pre-warned. I suspect it will be preceded by an economic collapse such as a Black Friday or Monday on the stock market, and also before investors in silver and gold certificates would be able to cash out as metal prices skyrocketed. This would allow carefully selected financial centers and people, the elite, to suck out all the money of the economy just before the planned event. All of this will come with a NASA announcement of a large-scale solar flare, such as an X-class solar flare, that is earthbound. Possibly there would be a shadow of truth in the solar storm story, but that is not the point. The point is that NASA's controlled new spin agency has already primed the pump for the cover story. So everyone is expecting the devastating solar storm. And all the possible scenarios are already in print, so we have many prior articles just to justify the cover story, including, as a major effect, the collapse of the power grid. All we need is a solar storm a bit bigger than average and a little more Earth-directed than average. Economic panic hits, and voila, you have all the makings of a national crisis. An act of God. How convenient. Pulling the plug on the power grid would be the result of already well-planned activity, and no one would be any the wiser. Rebuilding the power grid would take on a national priority, and Obama, the New World Order puppet president, moved the page and I lost my page. Obama would get his wish of building the new smart grid that would control every movement. Energy and its use would become highly controlled. You would not pump a drop of gas without a permit. Get the picture? Need I say more? When will this happen? Well, first of all, understand that all of the elements are well in place. Secondly, the NASA announcement would not come too far ahead of the actual events, since everyone would have forgotten it by the time the event hit. They have to give it a little time so it does not look too fishy. Thirdly, the economy is literally on the verge of collapse and social unrest is hitting its peak. I'm sure computer models of society have already been studied for years to know exactly the correct time to pull the plug. We already know it will happen at a time when the children will be in school. A sure way to control the middle-class American families is to control the parents coming to pick up their kids. And, of course, all for your safety's sake. Yes, all of the factors are in place. And lastly, what about a cover story to handle the alternative crowd of Americans who are waking up to the many factors of life? Well, here comes the well-fabricated Comet Elenin story with its laundry list of dates of alignments and sure Earth destruction, with the litany of phony attempts to alter and use my electrical nature of the solar system concepts and give legitimacy to certain dates when there is no legitimacy to any of those dates relative to Earth effects. That's speaking of Comet Elenin and the Comet Elenin ridiculous story. that it's somehow going to affect Earth. Okay, reading on. Remember that the elite in the secret satanic rituals use numerology and astrological dating to predetermine dates of events that they consider sacred. I've always known that the comet Ellen and BS was integrally related with these types of activities and clearly meant to deceive the alternative thinking crowd. So what do the indicators tell me? You should be able to come to your own conclusions. These are complex topics. But people who have followed my work know and understand what I am saying. Only a full-scale power outage could really complete the aim of taking down and controlling from shore to shore the United States of America and put the final blow to a country already on its knees. And just remember, the scenario has its cover story already well in place. A massive solar storm predicted by NASA that will come in the next solar cycle, sure to take down the power grid. Now that NASA is a space agency with no ability to go into space, it appears they have a new charter. That's the posting on my webpage. Okay, so we are now what appears to be a very Moses-like scenario, except that there's really no place for everybody to go to, as with Moses. So, once again, most people are going to be set with the issue of taking care of themselves. I'm going to make a little bit of a side note here halfway through the show. It's a note that I made this Sunday. I was sitting thinking about the icebergs that are breaking off of Antarctica as we speak. Massive icebergs the size of small, large lakes, the size of the island of Manhattan. Massive amounts of water and basically just going to float away and melt into the ocean. And why, with all of the military might and activity that we have in the United States, cannot those massive pieces of ice be moved up to Somalia where there's a shortage of water? As I've said many times before, we don't have a shortage of water or clean water in the United States and in the world. We have a management. We have a water management problem. Okay, so anyway, on to NASA. On to the Moses and the Israelites leaving Egypt. I'm going to start with the Passover. The Passover was where the Israelites were told to paint the blood of a lamb, to kill a lamb, and have it in the house. They had to seal all the doors and windows and stay inside until word was passed that it was okay to leave. Now, why would you do something like that? Well, let's come over to the Western Hemisphere where the Mayans did the same thing. They have a ritual in the Mayan Popol Vuh where they talk about this, and the Mayans continued this just like the Israelites have the Passover. The Popol Vuh talks about this, and the Mayans continued this for up into modern times when the Spanish first came to the New World. Anyway, they had the same ceremony where they would paint the blood of a animal over the door, seal the doors. That means so no air will enter or leave that structure, and they go inside into hiding. And only to emerge in the case of the Mayan celebration, they would emerge the next morning. But in the case of the Passover, they were in there for a long time. Now, why on earth would you do such a thing? And the real reason is, let's look at the cause of all of these events when Moses was leaving Egypt with the Israelites. That was because there was a large comet passing through the solar system at that time, and Earth was passing through the tail of the comet at that time. And that's where the poisonous gases from the large comet were going to affect and basically kill people. We know from comet studies, from small comets that are seen in the solar system today, not the big massive comets like Venus. The Venus comet was captured by Jupiter, came into the solar system, and was eventually became the planet Venus. That's what my scientific work explains. My books explain how the electrical discharge comets, the plasma discharge comet model, explains how comets, the big comets, can have their orbits circularized because of the tail drag of the comet. The comets are like giant cosmic vacuum cleaners, and so if Earth passes through this tail, arsenic and other poisons are in the tail, so that's where the poisonous air would come from. So the Passover was a time when the people had to go into their houses, seal them, and not come out until they were given word that it was okay. And you can imagine they probably had small animals that they would let outside the house one by one to test and see if that animal died. Then they would know not to go out yet. Only if they let an animal out and the animal survived for the next day or so could they finally come out. But the poisonous gas is definitely coming from a comet. And you see all of the other events that occurred during the days of Moses. So the painting of blood over the door and the sealing of all the gaps and air cracks in the doors was because of that. Now, I'm going to also talk about the 10 plagues of Egypt. Some people believe there were 7 plagues. But at any rate, the first one was blood. That everything turned to blood. Remember the prophecies, the end days prophecies. The moon will turn to blood. What is red that comes from a comet tail? Well, sulfur dioxide is one. A large comet that extends out into the region of Jupiter. There's a good quantity of sulfur dioxide that exists out there, and it's kind of an orange color. It's like a blood-looking color. There may be other things that happened at the time, but if we went through the comet tail, everything would be coated. And I remember, this is kind of a joke, I remembered somebody from the tropics once came when I was a kid and came up to the Minnesota where I was a kid, and they said they wanted to know about snow. And they said, now is snow going to be all over the place? I mean, over on the sidewalk and out in the street, too? And I said, yeah. It's going to be like, yeah, it's going to be on the sidewalk and the street, too. And of course, we grew up with snow, knowing that it snows everywhere, all over the place. It's everywhere. But they couldn't imagine that it would snow. Why would it snow in the street, too? Well, it's like the sulfur dioxide coming in from the comet tail. It was everywhere. It was in the air. And the red hand of the angel of death that came into the upper atmosphere, the auroras, you can see this happening. And as the fingers of red filtered down and dispersed in the atmosphere, went into the water, into the streams, into the rivers, into the lakes, and into every place where there was water, and turned it red and made it poisonous so that you couldn't drink it. That's why if something like this happens, you're going to need a water filter and a pre-filter. You got to get rid of this stuff. You can't drink that poisonous water. So that was the first plague of the 10. Then come the frogs. Well, gee, where do frogs live? Frogs live in the ground. And in a place like Egypt, the frogs would have a good lifestyle under the ground, but they can't live above the ground in that dry, hot climate. So what does frogs all over the place tell you? The second plague of Egypt, the second plague of Moses. Well, the frogs every place, what's happening when a comet comes by? It's putting up an electrical field around the earth. And that field is translated into the earth. When we were kids, we would take a 12-volt car battery out into the backyard before we went fishing. We would take a car battery and take two wires and stick them down into the ground. And what would happen? In about 5 minutes, all of the worms were crawling up out of the ground. Hundreds of them. You had all the worms you needed to go fishing. That's what we did. Why? Because that electric current through the ground forces up those little critters, and they all come out of the ground. In fact, we got some frogs that way, too. Okay, so that is the effect of an electrical plasma discharge comet coming by Earth. What about the next plague of gnats? The fourth plague was flies. Well, the same thing. When insects, if you really realize in a place like Egypt, those insects likewise live under the ground. And there's no trees, there's no vast amount of vegetation. So insects, it's sometimes said that the majority of life in the world is in the form of insects, and they live in the ground. And so, once again, as the comet passes by, setting up electric fields, and that electric field is pulsating, it's going to force all of the critters out of the ground. So you have first the frogs, then the gnats, then the flies. Then you have the livestock dying. So once again, you have the livestock trying to drink this poisonous water. And they're not going to last long. You don't have urns and water, vats of water. What livestock have to drink the water that's outside, that is in naturally occurring ponds. So in drinking that, pretty soon all the livestock are going to be dead. That's the fifth plague. You can see where this is coming from, a comet. The next one was boils on the skin. And once again, there are viruses that come in a comet tail, flu, and other types of viruses. That's one of the things that you would expect, an exposed skin that the viruses attack. And this comes right after the flies. Well, flies biting, boils that I see here in my mind's image are the type of boils you get from staph infection, which would be in an area, and if you have enough insect bites, especially flies that carry that bacteria, then you're going to get welts on your body, and very devastating. A lot of people actually die from this, certainly before they had antibiotics, etc., to fight these. The next thing that came was hail. Now, what an unusual thing for Egypt. Never having seen hail before, and all of a sudden, hail is falling from the sky. What does that mean? That means water. It's typically not a place where you're going to expect hail to be falling. So you have thunderstorms. Thunderstorms, the water raises up, forms around dust particles. Remember that hail, if you ever look at it, it looks like an agate. It's layers and layers of water that freeze as the hail blasts up in the thunderstorm, falls down, and goes up and down and up and down through this cycle until it gets so heavy it finally falls down. And you can have hail balls the size of a softball that come crashing down. But at any rate, hail was not your average weather phenomenon in Egypt. So hail, where does that come from? Once again, you have a passing comet, you have water, you have thunderstorms due to the electrical activity, and hail in a place where it has never been seen before. Next come the locusts. The locusts come in waves once again from a distance. In a distant land, they came in waves like locusts will do. The locusts live once again where? Under the ground. They hibernate there, and they come out every number of years, but once again, with the electrical activity of the comet, out they come. The next was darkness, that the land was covered with darkness. Well, once you get into that comet tail, you're not going to see much. It's going to block the sun, the light of the sun, and the earth is going to be cast into darkness. Now remember, we don't have a good reading on how long each of these plagues last. And there's a lot of distortion in history, but basically we know that darkness was the second to the last plague, and then the death of the firstborn, as I said, the gases from the comet tail killing many people, the Passover, where they had to stay inside. And apparently the word went through the Israelite camps where they knew enough to do this, and the Egyptians did not. So you can see where the children would be very much affected. But the reality was, when you really read history, many, many, many people, adults and everybody, died in this event. And so, there, once again, the poisonous gas from this large, massive comet passing by. Now, let's follow Moses as he takes off. He finally convinces Pharaoh to let the people go. And remember that this was a back and forth. The Pharaoh, okay, you people can go, and then he would renege, and he'd go get the Israelite slaves and bring them back. And remember, he felt he owned those people. Just like the European bankers and the government of this country think that they own you, that they should know everything about you, including the color of your underwear, and when you put it on in the morning and when you take it off at night. All of that is control, and they need that because they're paranoid, because they their power, their ultimate power, is the only thing that has them in the places where they're at. If not, they'd have to go out and get a real job. Where's George Bush going to get a job? Where's Barack Obama going to get a job? Well, I know a few hamburger stands that might take him, but where would these people get a job? They wouldn't. There's no place. The only thing they have going is to keep on top of the monopoly game, the real world monopoly game. Okay, so I've gone through the seven plagues. Now the Israelites are off and running. They've taken their loaf of unleavened bread and run into the desert. Now, it's very interesting to note that they cooked their unleavened bread on rocks. It was hot. There's a lot of subsurface volcanic activity, the rumbling earth. These people are talking about a lot of activity, but how about this event? The pillar of fire. They said there was a massive tornado-like pillar of fire that guided their way and lit their way and maintained a position between them and the approaching Egyptian armies. Whenever the Egyptians would get close, this pillar of fire would snap down and separate them. And now, all of this is very difficult to imagine. These are summaries of the type of things that happen, because you're trying to move hundreds of thousands of people out into the desert with no food in the middle of the night. Remember, it's dark. It's dark. There's no light. There's no street light. There's no headlight. There's no flashlight with LED light technology. They had nothing. They just ran out in to the night. And okay, so now they're heading down the Sinai Peninsula. And a pillar of fire that lights their way. Well, that pillar of fire is an extension from the comet to Earth. And there were probably many of these electrical connections to Earth snapping back and forth. And it would look like a giant tornado reaching up into the clouds and into the sky. Very definitely the result of an electrical discharge between the passing comet and Earth, the pillar of fire. So they finally get down to the southern end of this, what is now called the Sinai Peninsula, and Moses is called up and he goes up onto the mountain peak there, Mount Sinai, to a very high peak sitting there at the southern tip of the Sinai Peninsula, and he encounters a burning bush, a very unusual bush that continues to burn with a type of flame but is never consumed. What would that be? Well, that's electrical discharges. I was just recently in the Rocky Mountains. Signs all over the place and in literature that they hand out. If clouds move in, don't put anything up in the air because it's very electrical. Thunderstorms can have very powerful electrical discharges, lightning, to Earth if you're up in a mountain. Why is that? Because you're up high. The mountain itself is ground, but it's extended like a finger way up in the into the atmosphere, and that's the closest place for an electrical discharge. So the point is that Moses is up on Mount Sinai. It's a peak in the middle of nowhere, and so the electrical conducting activity is going on, and here he's standing next to a bush that seems to be burning. You can just see this thing fluorescing like a big Van de Graaff generator with the electricity shooting out, kind of that buzzing, snapping noise that you would hear around a highly charged electrical object, and with the little spinules of branches leaking the current off into the atmosphere. So here's Moses looking at this bush, and it's burning but not being consumed. That's electrical, everybody. That's electrical activity going on. This is all very prominent because of a passing large comet. Now, why do you think that the banking-controlled NASA has to keep pumping this phony idea that comets are dirty snowballs? Because they want all this history destroyed. They don't want you to understand that these kind of things happened and that they will happen again. Moses is up there, and I've seen pictures. I've not been, unfortunately, myself. I'd like to go someday. I would love to go to Mount Sinai. But you look at the rocks there, and they look like tablets. It's a way that the rock splits away, and you can see that a couple of those would be a perfect place for, and then the inscriptions coming from the electrical discharge activity or burning the codes into the rock, and Moses interpreting these and walking down the mountainside. When he comes down the mountainside, there's an earthquake. Many of the people are killed because they had changed their gold. They had pooled their gold and other valuable items and had built a false idol. And at that point, there was a massive earthquake with many of the people being killed. And so, anyway, these are the stories that are passed down to us about leaving Egypt, when Moses led the Israelites, and finally they ended up 40 years later. I already mentioned about the 40 years in the desert and a manna. And now that's something I have been scratching my head for a long time, that as this comet is in the solar system and Earth is very electrical, something was falling to the sky that they could eat and sustain themselves on. Maybe it was a type of hydrocarbon, but it was some soft thing that would be there in the morning and they would eat it. But they said by noon, it was gone. It sounds like snow. It sounds to me like snow that probably had hydrocarbons, and it was something they could eat that kept them alive. How strange. But at any rate, then one other issue I wanted to talk about here was the Ark of the Covenant. That was the Ark that held the sacred remnants of all of this, and it was carried around according to Moses had ordained that groups that the Levites would bear the Ark of the Covenant. Now, the Ark of the Covenant was obviously an electrical device. It was carried on long wooden poles, basically like almost small tree trunks from what it sounds like. It contained the artifacts from the Israelites leaving Egypt. And it was carried on two big wooden poles, and nobody could get near this thing. And nobody could touch it or get near it. And if they did, they would be immediately struck down and killed. So here we have a device that's highly electrical. There was a design that came out of, none of this is very clear in history, but apparently the Ark had been transferred in some place on this planet. The Ark of the Covenant still exists. This we know, but the fact is that we don't know where. Who has it? Is it known? Did it get placed eventually in some cave where it's been lost and forgotten? Many stories are built on the search for the Ark of the Covenant. But at any rate, the point I want to make here is we have one more electrical device coming out of this. This was interesting. This was a reading that actually came out of this past week's Gospels and the Book of Chronicles. And these are Old Testament readings. So no matter who you are, these are applicable. They're talking about David assembled all Israel, all the Israelites in Jerusalem. This is, by the one, the first book of Chronicles, verse 15, or chapter 15, 3 to 4, 15 to 16, and chapter 16, verses 1 and 2. It says, David assembled all Israel in Jerusalem to bring the Ark of the Lord to the place which he had prepared for it. David also called together the sons of Aaron and the Levites. The Levites bore the Ark of God on their shoulder with poles, as Moses had ordained according to the word. And, okay, so at any rate, it goes on and talks about offerings that they made at that time. But the Ark being brought on poles by a designated group of people who had the assignment to move this around with them. So at any rate, then the more or less in summary, we're talking about events that occurred thousands of years ago, thousands of years B.C., and the events are clearly related to a comet that passed by at that time. And one thing that I've always pondered is that it's very clear that the Noah's flood also, 40 days and 40 nights of rain, occurred due to the comet. Now, that appears, and this is just a technical point from a scientific point of view, that when Moses was heading out into the desert, that encounter with the comet had to be different than the Noah's flood issue, because the whole world was inundated by a flood. And so these events, they're hard to interpret, hard to understand, but very clearly the Noah's flood was also caused by a comet, a large passing comet. Velikovsky says that these events were caused by Venus, the comet, as it worked its way through the solar system, eventually becoming the planet Venus. The Mayan Popol Vuh and the Mayan legends are absolutely crystal clear on this, that Quetzalcoatl was the plumed serpent god of the night sky, whose heart eventually became the planet Venus. So you have a completely independent corroboration, where the two groups of people completely separated in history come up with exactly the same story. And you have this coming out of all societies around the globe, that the there was an event, but it appears that the Noah's flood occurred on one of the other events, must have been the second event of the passage of Venus. So at any rate, these are issues that I'm trying to clarify and put this history together. But one thing is clear, these events were caused by a large, massive passing comet, a Planet X-type comet. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.